Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host Adam, and with me is my co-host Jordan Valdez. How are you, Jordan?
Pretty good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. This is going to be another one of our special episodes, Jordan, because remember last time we did one of these, and I think this is the second one in the series. Last time we did the Superman Ultimate fan cast, where we picked the Superman cast of characters based on the different live action incarnation so far, and we chose our favorites.
Yes, that was so much fun, and now leading into what we're doing on this episode. So yeah,
right. And I don't remember if that's exactly what we called it, but screw it, it's our podcast.
I think what I named it was ideal live action Superman casts is what I call what I decided to call it
for today. You mean? For the last one.
For the last one, yes.
Whatever you want to call it, that's what we're doing today. But we're doing it for Batman, because once you've done Superman's world, excuse me, I'm joking here. Once you've done Superman's world, you have to do Batman. So here we are.
And just in case anybody didn't listen to the Superman one, should I explain?
Shame on you. But yeah, listen to that. But yeah, give a general idea of what that, you know.
Okay, so basically what we're doing is we're picking our favorite actor for each role within the Batman universe that's had at least three different actors portray the role. Okay. So actually, there's the exact same number for this one that there was for the Superman one, I believe. So we're only picking characters that have had three actors portray them, and we're picking at least three actors, I should say, and we're picking our favorite from them. And if it's somebody that has and alter ego, then you're allowed to pick a different choice for their alter ego versus their superhero or supervillain identity. Although I don't think I did that on my list, but I mean, I don't think I had any that were different. But yeah, that's what we're doing. It was a lot of fun for the Superman one, so I'm excited about doing it for Batman now.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Let's get things starting. So those are the rules, and let's go.
Alrighty, first up is Mr. Freeze / Victor Freeze.
Oh. There have been three. Yeah, that's right. There have been three.
There's been five, actually, for this one. Although three of them were in the same continuity.
Right, because it was the 66, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Am I going first?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to pick Gotham's iteration. The actor who plays him on Gotham?
Nathan Darrow.
Yes. And the reason is because there's a level of seriousness. It's played straight. Whereas the other ones, given the nature of 66, that was campier, obviously. So there was that element of jokiness. And then there was the Arnold Schwarzenegger debacle, which I refuse to even acknowledge as valid, so it wouldn't end up on my list. So Nathan Darrow is his name. That's who I'm picking. And I wish his outfit was a little better, but his performance, like, I actually feel his pain when he's trying to find his cure for Nora, and when he's with Nora. So that's the main reason behind me picking him. Who's your choice?
Surprise, surprise, Adam. I'm going to agree with you, man. Nathan Darrow is my choice as well. For pretty much the same reason, is that we finally got Mr. Freeze who is taken seriously in that action. And I mean, that's something that Mr. Freeze is my favorite Batman. And so I've been waiting a long time for him to finally be obviously. And unfortunately, on Gotham, I wasn't a big fan of sort of what they did with his origin, because they took inspiration from the Heart of Ice origin, but they changed it up quite a bit. So I didn't think it was that effective an origin for him as much as I would have liked. But Nathan Darrow's performance is great, and I personally like his suit quite a bit. And I think, you know, he, like you said, you can really feel his pain in the scene, in some of his scenes, and really how cold he is. Pun intended.
Oh, God. It's going to be one of those episodes that puns.
Hey, I feel like you have to have at least one when you're talking about Mr. Freeze. But I feel like he's what I wanted in terms of, even though in terms of his origin I didn't like it as much as I wanted to, in terms of a performance, he's what I wanted out of a live action Mr. Freeze. And we got that on Gotham, and I really dug Nathan Darrow's performance.
Fair enough.
Next up, we've got Poison Ivy / Pamela Isley / Ivy Pepper, depending on which one you decide to pick.
God, for God's sakes, why did they give her that name? why couldn't they just call her Pamela Isley? Like, really? What is this Ivy Pepper thing?
It felt like a change just for the sake of changing something.
Which is ridiculous. Look, everybody knows that I hate Batman and Robin. It's no secret. It's not an FBI guarded secret or anything like that, or CIA or whatever, whichever organization is hiding the fact that the aliens at Roswell. So it's no secret. But I will say that Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy in Batman and Robin was one of the only redeeming highlights of that movie, because she played the character as has been portrayed in comic books and animated series before. I thought there was a level of you know, danger to her. There was, you know, obviously the persuasive sexiness that Poison Ivy has to have. And there was also, you know, a general compassion for plant life in her performance. So, and there was a conviction in those beliefs that she had. So, for those reasons, and obviously Uma Thurman looks fantastic. For those reasons, I despite my grievances with that movie, I will gladly pick Uma Thurman.
Well, I think the listeners are actually going to be really shocked right now, because you're saying something very positive about
they've all fallen out of their chair at this point. You know, they're checking outside to see if there's cracks in the earth and whatnot.
And I actually agree with you in that I think that Uma Thurman was very good as Poison Ivy, because I actually think I mentioned that on our Arrowverse Crisis on Earth X review episode. I think in response to one of Stephen Maverick Marshall's questions, I actually mentioned that. I think I got off on a tangent or something. But I am not going to pick her. So you're going to be the one giving love to Batman and Robin right now, because I have a different choice for this, as even though I do like Uma Thurman. My choice is going to be Maggie Gyllenhaal from Gotham. And honestly, that's just going to be because she cracks me up so, so much in the role. Like, her interactions with the – like, once they recasted her sort of kind of, where they aged up Claire Foley so that she turned into Maggie Gyllenhaal last season on Gotham – she just, especially her interactions with Penguin, she was just so funny. She just, there's something so, I mean, she really did do a great job of capturing a kid in an adult's body, basically. She did a great job of sort of capturing it. Hopefully Zachary Levi can capture a certain type of thing as Shazam. Yes. But I think Maggie Gyllenhaal did a great job with it, and she had a lot of the most humorous moments for me of season 3 of Gotham. Now, of course, we do know, I feel like we should talk about this maybe a little bit right now, we do know she's getting recast again with Smallville alum. There we go. I got in my Smallville plug. Peyton List, who played Lucy Lane on Smallville, she was also on The Flash, but she's going to be... Cole Rowe's been recast with her. I have a feeling I'm going to really like her in the role, because I loved her on Smallville, and I really liked her on The Flash as well. So, but we haven't seen her yet in the role, so I can't comment on that. But for right now, Maggie Gyllenhaal is my choice for Poison Ivy.
Awesome.
Next up, we have the Demon's Head himself, Ra's al Ghul.
Oh boy, this is a hard pick. Wow. Look, I love the Dark Knight trilogy, and I love Liam Neeson. But I take performance as well as just not accuracy to the comic is not necessarily the right word. Spirit of the comic is more what I'm thinking of. And if I do that, I have to choose the actor who played him on Arrow.
Are you waiting for me to tell you what his name is?
Yes, what is his name?
Matt Nable.
Thank you. I can't pick Alexander, what is it, Siddick or whatever his name is, the guy on Gotham, because
it's
so brief. I mean, he's on the right track. But I don't, spoilers, I don't think he's dead, obviously. I think he's going to come back, so we'll see more of him. But in terms of the amount of performance I've seen, I have to go with what was it?
Matt Nable.
Matt Nable. See, I keep thinking of Noble and John Noble and the guy, you know, the guy from Fringe, also played Brainiac in that Superman movie, the one we're going to review,
Superman Unbound.
Yeah, that's it.
And so he's Malice on Legends of Tomorrow this season.
Right. So I get confused between him and that. But Matt Nable is my pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you hear a pause, it's because I'm waiting for you to announce the guy's name.
All right, well, I'll try to remember that now so that I help you out there. Here's what I'm going to say. If you remember on my Superman episode, 8 out of my 12 picks were Smallville people, yeah. Actors. Are you going to take the over or the under on that, on how many on this list are going to be Dark Knight trilogy actors?
Oh, I'm taking over. There's no way in hell it's anybody else.
You're taking over?
Oh, yeah, big time.
It's one under. It's 7 out of 12 on this one that are Dark Knight trilogy actors.
Oh, nice. Well, that's more correct because you are a Smallville. I call you and I mean this affectionately. I call you a Smallville cycle, but you know, the most affectionate terms. So that makes sense.
Okay. Well, I guess that is a good lead into who my choice is for this one. That's what I was sort of going for. And I sort of teased it earlier because if you noticed, I said Ra's al Ghul. And the reason I said Ra's al Ghul, because I'm somebody who usually says Ra's al Ghul. And I deliberately said Ra's al Ghul when I introduced this character, because the version of the character that I'm picking is Liam Neeson, who was called Ra's in the Dark Knight trilogy. So Liam Neeson for me is my favorite live action. Man, it is so unnatural for me to say Ra's. I always say Ra's. Ra's, here's my, I'm just going to say it. Ra's al Ghul.
you know how I like it pronounced?
How's that?
The way Bizarro pronounces it. He calls him Ra's al Ghul. And that I think should be canon from now on.
Oh my goodness.
I can't remember which story it's in, but I remember reading it, and I'm like, at first I didn't put the connection together because he wasn't on the page. So all I'm reading is Bizarro say Ra's al Ghul, and I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? But, you know, every time I read Bizarro, it gives me a headache. So I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell is he saying? And then the next, when you turn the page, Ra's al Ghul is right there. And I said, oh, I get it now. And I actually like that. So I'm, in my head, I always, whenever I see him, I call him Ra's al Ghul. That's my nickname.
Are you sure Bizarro is the best person to be trying to emulate, Adam?
Well, it simplifies the problem.
Okay.
There's
all
only
right.
one way you can say that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, I loved. All right. Here's what I'll say about Liam Neeson's Ra's al Ghul. Yeah. I loved, I mean, in Batman Begins, just everything about him was awesome. Like him coming to see Bruce Wayne for the first time and knowing exactly who he is, and then Bruce training with him and the whole scene about with him sort of trying to spur Bruce on with the whole thing about your parents' death wasn't your fault, it was your father's fault, and all that stuff, and him being a mentor to Bruce, and then you really see how you know devastated he is when he realizes Bruce isn't going to follow the path of the League of Shadows, and he saw this guy as his heir, really, as Ra's always does, and seeing when Bruce refuses to execute the guy, and just all of that, just him seeing him as a mentor, and then realizing he's lost Bruce, and he doesn't and when I say lost Bruce, I mean terms of he's not going to follow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, true. Yeah. Yeah, and then when he comes back and the whole twist with him, it turns out, yes, he is playing Ra's al Ghul. No, I did not include Ken Watanabe on this list in terms of a Ra's al Ghul. No, Liam Neeson, the whole twist with him actually being Ra's al Ghul, I just think is so brilliant. Another thing that I love about the Dark Knight trilogy is that they found a way to omit the Lazarus Pit, because I've talked about it on this show so much how much I hate resurrections in comics. And I think that the Lazarus Pit that basically represents everything I can't stand.
See, whereas I'm not voting for Liam Neeson because the Matt Damon version is more representative in terms of look, not so much as behavior, but in some degree, yeah, that. But in terms of look and like I said, overall spirit, I think Matt Damon's closer. But again, I absolutely don't mistake me. I agree with what you're saying because I love Liam Neeson in the role.
Okay. So all right. I mean, that's fair. Like, I liked Matt Damon too. But are you saying you pick? Are you saying that the fact that Matt Damon's version did use Lazarus Pits? Are you saying that contributed?
That's part of the fact that it's more in the spirit of the actual comic character.
Okay. Okay. I see what you're saying.
That's part of the reason why.
I'll disagree a little bit on that point, though, because, like I said, I think that the Dark Knight trilogy did something brilliant in that they still respected the immortality of Ra's al Ghul when he comes back in The Dark Knight Rises as a vision to Bruce. Yeah, and
it's a little bit of a couple.
Well, I just think it's so brilliant because it's, to me, that's so much better than having a Lazarus Pit. It's still respecting the nature of the character in the comics and the nature of what he does, but it's not using that part of the mythology that I can't stand. And so it's like, it's so brilliant. And I love that scene in The Dark Knight Rises when Bruce is in the pit and he has that vision of Ra's. And I just think I think it's so brilliant. And I think everything about Ra's, the way he trains Bruce, the everything, and how Bruce continues to use that training, and it keeps popping back up throughout the trilogy. Just I love Liam Neeson's Ra's al Ghul.
Awesome. I won't argue with that selection.
All righty. Nice. Well, moving on to Two-Face / Harvey Dent.
It's your pick first, right?
Oh, it is. I think you did. Let's see.
I did Ross.
Oh, you did. You did three in a row, actually, I think.
Well, pick first. Why you put the spot? Okay. Why you put me under the pressure?
Well, I was letting you go. It doesn't matter to me. I'll go with this one. This is honestly, there wasn't a single pick on this list. On the Superman list, there was one pick that was hard for me. On this list, there weren't any that was hard for me. However, this one was one of the easiest ones. It is Aaron Eckhart. Hands down. Hands down, forget about it. It's Aaron Eckhart. And for me, like, with Aaron Eckhart, it's like I was – you remember on our Batman 66 animated episode how I said I was very defensive of the character of Two-Face?
Yes.
Okay. Aaron Eckhart, he was everything I wanted in a Two-Face performance. The reason I'm so defensive of Two-Face is because I think that Batman Forever did the character such a disservice. And I think that we finally got the Two-Face I always wanted with The Dark Knight. And I think that it's a shame that Aaron Eckhart doesn't get enough praise for that film. The Heath Ledger gets all the praise typically. And I mean, he should get so much praise because he was phenomenal. And I still do think he is if I'm picking one of the villains in that movie, it's still going to be Heath Ledger. But Aaron Eckhart was, he should not be overshadowed because he was so phenomenal too. What I love about Aaron Eckhart's Two-Face is that you see, the thing that's most fascinating to me about Two-Face is his descent into villainy. It's the fact that he starts out as Gotham's White Knight. He starts out as this person that Bruce sees as somebody who can save the city without being in a cowl. He sees him as this person who's this beacon of hope to the city. And it's like, And then that all comes crumbling down, and it's so heartbreaking, and it's so devastating. What Aaron Eckhart, I'm literally choking up just thinking about this right now, so bear with me here. But I just...
I'll bring your Kleenex, but I don't know how you're going to do that with, you know, through the computer.
The scene at the end when he has a gun to James Jr., and he's like, he's telling Jim Gordon to basically lie to James Jr. like he had to lie to Rachel. And it's just like, that scene kills me every time, because like, you get it, like obviously Two-Face is doing the wrong thing, but you get how much pain he's in. Like, you saw what he had to go through. I mean, he acted phenomenally in that scene too, where he's tied up and the Joker's gonna kill either him or Rachel, and it's like, and he's talking to her over the, I guess it's not the speaker or whatever.
Yeah, I guess it's like an intercom kind of thing.
Yeah, that thing. Anyway, he just so phenomenal in that scene. So phenomenal in, I mean, I know this is a scene where the Joker really shines, but Two-Face too in that hospital scene with the Joker and the Joker's talking to him, and oh my goodness, you see how angry Two-Face is, and just like, it's, oh, he's so good. And Aaron Eckhart is just, honestly, I mean, if it weren't for Heath Ledger's Joker, I would say that Aaron Eckhart should have won an Oscar for that as well, because he just, oh my goodness, he was brilliant in that film.
I mean, it's a great choice, and the reason why I say it's a great choice is because he's also my choice for Two-Face.
I figured we'd probably agree on this one.
And you know, I like when people agree with me, because you know, it doubles down on the fact that I'm right. And if they disagree with me, well, then hey, somebody's wrong and it ain't me. No, I mean, he was phenomenal. What I loved it was that we actually got to see both sides of the character. We got to see the, and I don't mean that as a pun. literally, we got to see, you know, Harvey Dent, the district attorney, the quote-unquote good guy, you know, actually being a district attorney and doing his job. Whereas in Batman Forever, we saw it on a TV screen. Wow.
The most interesting part of the character was glossed over in TV footage. Exactly.
And you know, so you really rooted for him as you know, the district attorney. And that when he spoilers for The Dark Knight, if you haven't seen that, God help you and God have mercy on your soul. But you know, in the scene where he takes responsibility and says, I'm Batman, so that Batman could keep, you know, going in his quest to apprehend the Joker. That's believable, because he's so genuinely, his main goal up to that point is to eradicate corruption out of, you know, from Gotham City, and so it's very believable. And then the torture when you know, Rachel is killed, and you know, when that hospital scene, you see how unhinged he is, like. And he could snap at a moment's notice. Like, 1 minute he's, you know, he's got a little bit of Harvey still in him, like, you know. But then he just, you know, snaps on a dime, and that pun was intended. So, you know, I love the way Eckhart played that, and also the visual effect for the charred the side of his face looked phenomenal. It was visually disturbing. Like,
yeah,
it was almost borderline sickening to look at, in a good way. Whereas, you know, Tommy Lee Jones looked like Barney the dinosaur shattering his face. let's call a spade. So, it's an unquestionable choice. You can't choose. If you choose Tommy Lee Jones, and that's the only other choice, correct?
No, because there's three for all of these. So remember, because three is our minimum. So
the guy from Gotham.
Nicholas Diogosto.
It's such a minute experience with him so far that I can't choose him. So
it's ridiculous. He was a series regular in season two, and I think he only showed up in two or three episodes, and now we haven't seen him since.
So
I don't.
Most
think.
People won't choose him because they probably don't remember him like I do.
He was good. He was good for
He was, but I just forgot about him. But
yeah,
I'm sorry if you choose Tommy Lee Jones in this, you're either Joel Schumacher, or you need psychiatric help. So that's my choice, And what's the next character?
First of all, I want to say, Adam, I'm not sure we've ever been so much on the same page on this podcast before as we were right then.
Well, hey, when you're right, you're right. And but when I say when you're right, it's when I'm right, you're also right. And when you disagree with me, well, like I said, in most cases, some cases it's just I will give you your disagreement and I will support your choice even though I disagree. But in most cases, when you disagree, you're wrong. But let's continue. What's the next choice? I'm glad we're agreeing though. It makes for a fun, enjoyable experience.
It does. It does. We'll see how much that continues throughout this list. The next up, we've got another character that starred with Two-Face in Batman Forever, the Riddler, / Edward Nygma, of course.
All right. I'm going to take this one.
Go ahead.
I'm going to go classic. I'm going to go Batman 66, Frank Gorshin. Here's why. Because the Riddler's whole point of view, like his whole modus operandi, I should say, is to play mind games with Batman using riddles, correct?
Yes. Right? Yeah.
For the most part, that's his thing.
I mean, he wants to basically prove that he's more intelligent than Batman.
Correct,
that
correct.
He sees Batman as the only intellectual, you know, person who's on his level. So
exactly. Okay, and so here's the thing. What Jim Carrey did in Batman Forever was basically picture Jack Nicholson's Joker having sex with Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and the result, the baby from that encounter, is Jim Carrey's Riddler.
No, that's not true, Adam. Jim Carrey's Riddler is a modern take on Frank Gorshin's Riddler.
It's a piss poor attempt. Let me say that. Is that fair? I didn't like his rendition of imitating Frank Gorshin. It came off as...
Can you admit that's what he was trying to do?
That's what he was going for. He failed miserably, but that's what he was going for. But he still failed miserably. I like Corey Michael Smith. Is that the arrangement of the names?
That's his name.
Well, the guy's got three first names. What the hell do you want me to do?
I always get mixed up between his name and Robin Lord Taylor's name because they both got three names. Yeah, so
their parents really got to simplify things for us. I don't know what the hell is going on here. But anyway, I like him. I like him in the role. To me, he's still not like he's an Edward Nygma that is still forming. Like he's a Riddler in transition kind of thing.
You know, well, there was a time. I mean, he literally donned the costume and started calling himself the Riddler, though.
He did, but it wasn't the full. Like, he wasn't. It was still more. Like, he wasn't going full on with the riddles in that respect, in terms of using them to foil. I mean, he did in an episode with him where he was playing mind games with Gordon. And had he been doing that on a consistent level, I would have voted for him, but it's inconsistent. The amount of times he does that.
He did it with Lucius Fox, I think, too, in one episode.
Yeah, there are occasions, and he's on his way to it. And you know, as the series goes on, I think, for me, he has a chance to supplant Frank Gorshin. But for right now, given the intent of the character and the ultimate goal of the character, I have to give it to Frank Gorshin. So that's my rationale.
All right, I'm gonna firmly disagree with you on this one. So
I knew it was coming.
Last one.
It's not Jim Carrey, is it?
No, it is not Jim Carrey.
Well,
so
we're good.
Okay, all right, we're good then. I'm sorry, Adam. I just can't. For me, like Batman and the Batman universe really are some of the most malleable, if not the most malleable characters in all of fiction. So I certainly have respect for campy takes, but for me, that's not the version of Batman, that's not the version of this universe that appeals to me. It just doesn't appeal to me that much. And I have respect for it, and I still like it to a certain extent because it's still Batman, and I still love Batman. So I appreciate those takes, but for me, it's never going to be my favorite, pretty much ever. So for me, that's why Frank Gorshin, even though, I mean, he did a great job with that version of the character, but that's just not That's not what I want to see out of the Riddler. And so then, of course, Jim Carrey, to me, was just doing a Frank Gorshin. And, of course, I've also got to point out, we did also have John Astin in the Batman 66 series as well.
The Riddler. I only see Frank. To me, it's Frank Gorshin.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I just wanted to point out that there was one more choice. But for me, it's hands down Corey Michael Smith, because he's the first live-action Riddler that's given us a cold, sly, intelligent, cunning Riddler. I mean, we haven't gotten that before, and we're finally getting that with Corey Michael Smith, and I think that he really captures the intelligence and the cunning of the character so well. And, like, for me, it's like, I think that those scenes it's hard because, like, those scenes when he's, like, he's going through his whole Riddler thing with Gordon, you brought up, and I think I brought up Lucius Fox too. It's like, if I just picture that with Bruce Wayne, I would love to see, like, now that Bruce is in a costume and he's vigilanteing, maybe if we actually saw the Riddler and Batman sort of, or Bruce, whatever, he doesn't have a cool name like the Blur, the Red Blue Blur yet on the show. Maybe he'll get one.
Well, but I hope they don't start going, if they call him the Dark Knight, I'm gonna go kick somebody in the production of Batman. Like, really, like I
said. Well, in any case, I would love to see Dare and Alex go up against each other on the show at some point, because I want to see, because I think Corey Michael Smith is so good as the Riddler, I want to see him go up against Bruce Wayne's intellect. So anyway, but just from a performance standpoint, at the very least, and I know they're doing something kind of weird with him right now. I'm still really enjoying it with him sort of.
Yeah, see, I don't dig this stupid angle that they're going for right now. That's the.
It's made for a funny moment, Grundy. But now I don't know. I'll throw out a spoiler. In the most recent episode, it looks like he might finally have his intelligence back.
Yeah, let's hope so, because that's when he's best.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I've enjoyed this sort of storyline they've taken him on. But anyway, hands down, my favorite Riddler in live action.
All right, fair enough.
Alrighty. Next up, we have the Penguin / Oswald Cobblepot.
All right, go ahead. You take it first.
Alrighty. This one, I would say, was a little bit harder for me, but really not that hard at all either. It was like, I thought about it for about 5 seconds, and then I was like, yeah, it's no question. It's Danny DeVito for me. And that is because, for me,
You know what? Hold on. How about we do this? Because we just, we had a Batman Returns review at Christmas.
Yes.
If you want specifics about Danny DeVito and his performance and why Jordan, because I'm sure, if I remember correctly, Jordan talked about it on that episode to some degree, go there. But let's try, because we've tackled some of those characters on those reviews, keep the why you love them in those reviews, because I'm sure, for the sake of not repeating us ourselves.
Review. We talked about characters that we'd already talked about on other.
Fair. Like, I'm just saying that's not we don't have to over expand on these ones because you know what I mean? Like, say what you're going to say, but don't spoil the other review for those people that haven't listened yet. That's what I'm saying. But go ahead.
So should I can talk about him, or I can't talk about him?
Yeah, but just don't go into too in depth, like, you know what I mean?
Okay, all right.
Save some of it for the people that haven't listened to our Batman Returns review yet, and shame on you if you haven't. it was a great time. We had Andy on. It was good.
Okay, so can I talk about Danny DeVito? Go ahead.
Talk about Danny. I told you can talk about Danny DeVito.
Okay, I love Danny DeVito's Penguin, because for me, Danny DeVito's Penguin is, for me, the Penguin, as he's typically portrayed, is not one of my favorite Batman villains. And here's the thing. It's that the Penguin, for me, he's one of the most popular Batman villains, and I think that's largely in part because he had such a big role in the 60s series with Burgess Meredith's portrayal. But for me, he was never that interesting in most of his portrayals. Like, and Danny DeVito, Tim Burton, yes, he did a very weird take. Yes, I don't think Danny DeVito's take would work in most versions of Batman, but for Tim Burton's take, it was brilliant, and I thought it made Penguin, this is the most interested I've ever been in a version of the Penguin. Like, Danny DeVito, he went all out with that role, and he made him this freakish, outcast Penguin. He made me, first of all, he cracked me up at times. Like, his just, I mean, he's like, you know what the Penguin is like in Batman Returns? He's like Glenn Quagmire from Family Guy. And you know, like his scenes with like his like hypersexuality in that movie is just so funny. And his first of all, the way he goes around walking everywhere, he just grunts every time he walks. He's like
almost like he's in pain.
It is, yes. Yes, and he's disgusting, and he's dripping goo from his mouth, and it's just, it's such a visual, like, it's, like, so visually striking, his Penguin. And, like, I love his scenes, like, with Max Schreck when he's like, here's Fred's hand, and he hands Max Schreck his hand, and he's, like, just all this disgusting stuff he does in that movie. And, like, it's, and, like, okay, my favorite scene in the movie that just cracks me up every time is his, and I quote this line all the time, could be worse. My nose could be gushing blood. And then the two mayoral assistants look at each other, and they're like, and then the woman starts kind of like making a laugh, like, oh, that's so cute, because she thinks the Penguin's so cute at first. And then he bites the guy's nose off. And then, oh my goodness. And it's just that he's so funny. And like, but then he's also heartbreaking. Like at the end of the movie, what's so heartbreaking about it is that at the end of the day, he really was alone, because you look at when he dies at the end of that movie, spoiler, the only people that are there for him anymore are those Penguins. And it's like, man, he cracks me up. He makes me sad. He's just, Danny DeVito goes all out in that role. And I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I'm going to look pretty much for everything you said. I'm going to agree with you. It's Danny DeVito. And the only other thing I'll add is that before I saw the first two Tim Burton movies, the only thing I knew of Batman was the live-action stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, aside from Burgess Meredith, who I was too young at the time to really, you know, grasp his performance.
Yeah.
So, for lack of a better, you know, phrase, Danny DeVito was the first Penguin I truly ever understood and saw, before I even saw the comic incarnation. So, for me, that's the Penguin.
Eh?
It's like, you know, it's just, yeah, etched in my memory. So,
would you agree with me that he's the most interesting version of the character?
Oh, by far, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Without question.
All right.
Who's next on the list?
Oh, boy, Adam. Oh, boy. This is going to be a good one. The Joker.
Oh, man. All right. And why did I pick this one to go first? Well, look, I'll say it. I loved Cesar Romero. I loved Jack Nicholson. I really like Jared Leto. I wish that we saw more of him in Suicide Squad. For more on that, I try and go list our review of Suicide Squad. But for me, it's undeniable. The best live-action Joker is Heath Ledger. It is such a unhinged, chaotic, psychotic almost, version of the character. There were times in that movie where he literally scared the shit out of me. Well, not literally, because I didn't crap my pants. But he scared the shit out of me. You know, like, and it was the unpredictability of it all. You didn't know what he was going to do. And when he came on screen, you got chills. His laugh was creepy. His look was wasn't as polished as, you know, either Cesar Romero or Jack Nicholson. All that, and the fact that Heath Ledger like literally disappeared in the role, it all adds up to him being the best live action iteration of the character. I mean, what more can I say than that?
Yeah. Hey, well, that's two in a row now that we're agreeing on, because Adam, Heath Ledger, and I'm going to go ahead and say it right now, he is the best live-action villain, not just DC villain, the best live-action villain performance that I have ever seen.
Yeah, there's no question in any universe.
In any universe. Yeah. And I'm not even talking superhero films. I'm talking just film in general, any film I've ever seen.
I'd agree with you there, yeah.
I'm going to tell a story, and I don't know if you've heard this story before, Adam. I don't know if you saw it.
Tom Welling is mentioned, I'm leaving.
No, it's not a Smallville story. Okay. Have you seen the recent Heath Ledger documentary that came out? I'm trying to remember.
I did, yes. I am Heath Ledger.
Yes, I believe that's what it's called. One story that stands out to me so much from that documentary, I can't remember who told this story. I wish I could. I guess maybe it was one of his friends, or I think it was one of his friends that told this story on the documentary. He was talking to Heath one day. I think they were like walking together or something, and he's asking him, once Heath got the role as the Joker, he's like, man, how are you going to top Jack Nicholson? How are you going to do that? And he keeps saying, I don't know how you can do that. It's going to be crazy. And all of a sudden, he sees that Heath, I guess, is sort of walking behind him or whatever, right? And he just hears from behind him, why so serious? And he just literally, you remember that story? Yes. And his friend's talking about how he just got chills, right? Just like completely, he was like, oh my goodness, what is this guy? Like, he is going to kill it. And he knew from that moment, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that story just was so poignant for me, because it was like, I can totally see how he knew just from that he was going to kill it. And Heath Ledger, I mean, my goodness, what can you even say about him that hasn't been said? Like, this guy...
It's impossible to...
It really is. And he just... you're right, he's so terrifying in that movie. He's so... The way he's written is just brilliant. I love how he's like... How you really see sort of the relationship and the juxtaposition of him and Batman, like the interrogation scene. Of course, everybody always talks about that, and rightfully so, because it's one of the, like, it perfectly lays out exactly what Batman and the Joker are all about, and what their relationship is all about, what makes them polar opposites, what makes them arch enemies. And it's just, oh my goodness, it's his performance. It literally sends chills down my spine every time I watch that movie.
It won an Oscar for a reason. And
yes,
you know, there are people that say, well, it's a posthumous Oscar, and had he lived, he probably wouldn't have won it. I think that's bullshit.
That's absurd. That is absurd. He deserved that. There's no way his performance didn't deserve that. That performance, I mean... I'm struggling with what even to say about his performance.
It's you know, epic is overused, but in this case, it's true.
It's warranted. It is definitely warranted. Yeah. So I guess, hey, we're in complete agreement on that, man.
Well, you gotta be an idiot to disagree with that, in my opinion. I'm not actually calling somebody who prefers Jack Nicholson an idiot, but in general, because I mean,
everybody's no, totally. Everybody's totally
entitled to their own opinion, but I think, I love Jack Nicholson, but how can you choose Jack Nicholson, in my opinion, over? I don't know.
That's fair. I'm not a big fan of Jack Nicholson's Joker, to be honest. But if anybody who thinks Jack Nicholson's better, I mean, that's totally fine. I totally get that.
Yeah, when I say you're an idiot, I'm joking. But you know, but in my head, just.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
I can't fathom it. But personally.
For me, it's like, it's so, I can't, yeah, it, hands down for me, Heath Ledger. All right, I guess we should move on. I feel like we could talk about Heath Ledger.
Yeah, and that's what the Dark Knight episode of our podcast is for.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Well, at the time they hear this, we may have recorded that, who knows. If we have, go listen to it. If not, when it happens, it's going to be epic. But,
Yes. All right, you ready?
Yes.
All right. Batgirl/Barbara Gordon. Let's see. It's my turn.
Yes.
Adam, I think you're gonna like this pick on my part.
Well, to me, there's only one.
Okay, and I should say, because you bring that up, I'm counting. There are three options, and the three options are, of course, Yvonne Craig. I am counting Barbara Wilson from Batman and Robin. I am counting.
Because even though Joel Schumacher had no idea what he was doing, and nobody at DC or Warner Brothers cared about actual fact checking, you know, they can call her whatever they want. They can make it related to Alfred, which is asinine and ridiculous. But Batgirl is Barbara Gordon. And
yeah, on a tangent about that, but the reason I think that that worked is because Commissioner Gordon had such a small role in those films that I think that giving her a connection to Alfred instead, and especially with the whole McGregor syndrome storyline, I actually think that that fit together very well. And I was a fan of that change. I'm not saying I want that to be the case always, but I think in that movie it did work for me.
I think they shouldn't have included her in that movie. They would have been even better. But go on.
I disagree, because that's the only live-action Bat Family movie we have to date, and that's one of the reasons I really like that.
And look at what that produced. Go on. Continue. Okay. Who's you? Come on, get to the things I like. Let's go. Move along.
With all that said, Alicia Silverstone is not my favorite, Barbara. That would be Dina Meyer.
Yes.
Great TV series. And of course, she mostly played Oracle, but we did see her as Batgirl in flashbacks. And that, by the way, that costume she had was sick. She really encapsulated what I feel like Barbara Gordon is in the comics. She really, I loved how she was really the leader of the Birds of Prey in that she really, you could see how intelligent she was, but also how badass she was. And like especially in the flashback, seeing her fight as Batgirl and seeing a badass Batgirl, but also even as Oracle too, despite her disability, she still was just such a badass. And like she, just using her intelligence to really, I mean, that's what Oracle was all about, finding another way, despite what happened to her, to still be a hero. And that's really what I feel like Dina Meyer encapsulated with her version of Barbara Gordon. And like, just, I mean, everything about that, I think that her, especially her sort of chemistry with the other characters on that show, particularly with Alfred in that show, really stuck out to me. You could really see that there was a history there with him, with the two of them, and in terms of course her being part of the Bat Family, and then with Alfred there, and then that continuing on, and just Dina Meyer just gave a phenomenal performance in that series, and she's quite honestly, I would have to say, my favorite part of that series, to be honest.
Well, okay, listen, again, Jordan and I are on the same page when he's not talking nonsense about Batman and Robin and things that work, because there are very few minor things that worked. The best part was the fact that it ended. But that being said, Dina Meyer, to me, she only had one scene or a couple scenes as Batgirl, and they were incredible. You're right, the costume was incredible, and hint to Joss Whedon or whoever ends up making the Batgirl movie, because I think the Batgirl movie will happen. Whether Joss Whedon makes it or not is another story. We'll get into that on another podcast. But a word to the wise, try and create a costume that looks as good as that. But again, it goes beyond the facade, the Batgirl costume or whatnot. It's the characterization, and that's what Dina Meyer nailed. And I'll comment on her time as Oracle, since you did as well. To somebody who has a physical disability, like myself and other people, the portrayal of that character was so strong that it was so incredible and empowering. And at the end of the day, whether she's Oracle or Batgirl, that's I think that's a standout of the character. It's that there's an inherent goodness in her, and there is this almost like I can do anything attitude that she's got, and it radiated through the actress. And also, you know, Like you said, the intelligence of Barbara Gordon and the way Dina Meyer portrayed that, it's let me tell you, there's a lot of female characters, you know, in superhero movies and television that unfortunately or sadly are either not displayed with that much intelligence, or it's glossed over and you never actually see it. And so this, her performance, I think, was groundbreaking in that respect too. So to me, she was the perfect iteration of both. I mean, we've only seen one Oracle in live action, but in terms of Batgirl and Oracle, I think she was pitch perfect on both counts.
Yeah, you know, we're agreeing on this episode more.
And by the way, I will say this. We are going to do a recap. And because it's so short, we are eventually going to do an episode-by-episode recap of Birds of Prey. So look forward to that.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I know you are, knowing how big a fan you are of that show.
I'm a big fan of that. I did something that I never thought I would do. You know what? I'll save it for that episode. It's a good story.
Okay.
I pulled a Sheldon Cooper. That's all I'll say, and I'll leave the mystery. I'll leave the mystery open, and for you guys to discern what that was, and you'll find out when you do that episode.
Alrighty. I guess I'll say something right now about it. I went to at Dragon Con this year. They did a Birds of Prey reunion panel. I think you mentioned, Adam, that you were able to catch that online.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there at that panel, and it was so awesome hearing her and Ashley and Rachel reminisce about that series.
And by the way, I just want to point this out. I mean, it's pointless. It's ridiculous. But Ashley Scott tweeted back at me once, and I totally fanboyed. I'm not going to lie.
That's awesome.
Man, I had a crush on her when that series was going. I'm not going to lie. I don't care. I still do. So there. She will probably never come on the show if she ever hears it now, but I put it out into the ether. There it is. Now, who's the next character?
Alrighty. Well, it's the father of the character we just talked about, unless you're talking about Batman and Robin, in which case it's not. That would be Jim Gordon.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, look. Oh, well, I can't say it's a no-brainer, but it's almost a no-brainer. For me, there's only one, and I unfortunately I can't count J.K. Simmons because we've only seen about 3 minutes of him. But for me, it's Gary Oldman. And Gary Oldman, he had everything. It was the unapologetically honest cop. He was actually a really good, I mean, when he was Detective Gordon, he was a really good detective that actually got shit done, which is surprising in Gotham City given the corruption. And when he was commissioner, he led his troops with honesty and integrity, as you would expect him to do. And his relationship with Batman, Chris Nolan, Christian Bale, and Gary Oldman captured that pitch perfectly. He was a spitting image of the year one iteration of the character. And to me, he's just the best of the best Jim Gordon. Simple as that.
He's a silent guardian, a watchful protector, a dark knight. Hands down, Gary Oldman. I'm in 100% agreement with you, my
although
friend.
Gary Oldman did that quote better than you.
Well, of course he did. If he didn't do that quote better than me, then he wouldn't be my favorite Jim Gordon.
That's a good point.
Oh, my goodness. Gary Oldman, I 100% agree with you, man. The thing that most stands out to me is that they really captured the dynamic between him and Batman, the partnership that they had, the shared commitment that they had to saving and protecting Gotham City. Mm-hmm. And it's like they got that so right in the Dark Knight trilogy, and Gordon's performance through those films, like, I mean, just starting in Begins with him, you were right, he is a spitting image of year one Gordon, both in terms of his personality and his actions and in terms of his look. I mean, Gary Oldman is sort of known for sort of really transforming visually into different roles. I mean, you look at him playing Winston Churchill currently, and it's like with Gordon, he did it too. I mean, he literally looks like right out of the page of year one, and it's like that's not the most important thing. The most important thing was his performance, and he just completely nailed it with that too. This guy, he is firm, and you can see that he's like, I mean, you don't want to screw with this guy, but at the same time, he's a very warm character.
Yes.
is in begins when he puts the coat around Bruce's shoulders, and he's like after the Wayne murder, and he's like consoling him.
Yes.
And then it comes back with the most emotional payoff that just makes me cry every time I see The Dark Knight Rises when they flash back to that. And
you're gonna be crying on that episode quite a bit, aren't you?
I have a feeling that I definitely will have a tissue box next to me during that episode, because I have a feeling that it's going to be a wise decision, because I cannot talk about the scene at the end of that movie. You know what? I'm actually going to probably talk about it later on this episode, but I'm going to save it not for Gordon, but I'm going to save it for my Batman choice. And I realize that's spoiling exactly right now who my Batman choice is, but I don't care. Most people could probably predict who it was already. But anyway, with Gordon, it's like with him, he captured the essence of Gordon so well. He's a phenomenal actor, and just his emotional through line throughout those movies is just it's beautiful. And that guy was phenomenal. He was phenomenal.
All right, agreed. Who's next?
A certain British butler, and that would be Alfred.
I'm gonna say. Hold on, Jarvis. No, that's the wrong universe. Alfred, of course, because screw Jarvis. Actually, he's a computer, so you can't really screw him. But anyway, this is getting weird. So, Alfred, it's your choice. Who do you pick?
Well, it's going to get basically with Gary Oldman. Now we're getting like I said, it's going to be 7 out of my 12 here are Dark Knight Trilogy actors, so we're really getting into the thick of it in terms of me just picking Dark Knight Trilogy actors. It's Michael Caine, man.
Man, you have no idea how to bury the lead, eh? Just it's not in your DNA, is it?
It's not. It's not at all. Well, I sort of am burying the lead here, but I'm burying it poorly because I'm not giving you the name until like.
I picked 7 of the Dark Knight people. Wink, wink. Like George Reeves did less winking at the camera in the Adventures of Superman 50s TV series, and he did that every single episode for 7 seasons. So,
it's Michael Caine. I think that he just captured the fatherly relationship to Bruce so well. Like, that's what it was for me. He really, that relationship is so important to the Batman mythology. Really, just, you had to capture people who felt like father and son. That's what Nolan did by casting Bale and Michael Caine. And it's like his performance in those movies, like the scene in Batman Begins, you still haven't given me up on me, Alfred. Never. And just that line, and it's like, and then in The Dark Knight Rises, then when he finally, when Alfred leaves, and they have that whole thing when he's like, well, I can't let you basically commit suicide, is basically what Alfred thinks he's doing. And it's like, he leaves, and it's like, it's the hardest thing Alfred has ever had to do, but it's like, he's doing it because he literally thinks it's the only way he can protect Bruce. And it's like, then at the end of that movie, when he thinks that Bruce has died, and he's like, I'm sorry, I failed you. Jesus, it just, that kills me every time, that line.
Every time Michael Caine cries, I cry too.
Yes. It's
synchronized crying. It's great.
yeah, when that movie, I mean, here's the thing.
The good thing is those movies came out in the summer, so I could excuse them as allergies, right? So it's good.
I'm telling you, man, I have never cried as hard as I did coming out of The Dark Knight Rises for the first time. And it, like I said, it started with the scene I'm going to talk about later, but basically the scene where Batman leaves with the bomb. But then it just kept going and going with the scene with Alfred at the grave saying that I failed you. And then it kept going because then it was tears of joy by the end when you find out that Bruce is still alive. But it just, that movie, and then it was tears of joy at the end of how perfect a movie that was, in my opinion. I know that we have a slight disagreement on that, but Michael Caine, getting back to him specifically, just out of this world performance. He just unbelievable.
Yeah, now it's my turn. This is tougher than I thought, because I'm teetering on, your impassioned vouching of Michael Caine is really has really thrown a monkey wrench into my into my plans.
Well, I guess I feel proud of that, actually, Adam. So
I really love I really love Michael Caine. To me, he just, you're right, he did everything you said was 100% spot on. But you know which Alfred I like the best? And he gets a slight edge over Michael Caine, is Sean Pertwee from Gotham. And I'll tell you why. Because he balances the fatherly aspect of Michael Caine's Alfred with the, what's the right word? The tactical partner version of Alfred that we saw with Jeremy Irons. Like, Sean Pertwee, to me, is a mix of both. And ever since I read Batman Earth 1, and they gave Alfred more of a substantial backstory, and now they've done it in a backup story. I think it was in Detective Comics, if I remember correctly. They've done a similar thing. Ever since I've seen that, I wanted that more from Alfred. So I think Sean Pertwee is the best of both worlds. So, and that's why I'm gonna give the honor to him.
Okay, I think Sean Pertwee is excellent, and I love Batman Earth 1. And I think that Sean Pertwee does a great job capturing that sort of that version of Alfred. But for me, I'm always gonna go back to a more traditional Alfred. That's more of a, I mean, less of a, how would I put this? Less of the sort of gritty Alfred and more of the sort of warm, fatherly Alfred that I feel like Michael Caine is.
I can't wait to see what Sean Pertwee does in the next episode of Gotham, because Bruce has been in the trailer. It looks like he's getting to some very promiscuous activity.
Yes, indeed.
With one of his female friends.
One more thing I'm going to say about Sean Pertwee's Alfred. I'm never going to quite forgive him for that. I mean, this is partly just a weird kind of weird choice on the
it's the writer's fault.
Right choice. But their choice to have him slap Selina Kyle in one episode.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, but it's not his fault.
Never
going to
sit right with me.
It's not his fault. It's the writer's fault. But yeah, so there's my pick.
Okay.
Who's next?
All right, Adam. I've been saving this because you took two in a row earlier, so I'm.
Yeah,
I'm
I know who it is, so you can go first. I know you're dying to get off on your Catwoman soapbox. So go ahead.
You know I am, man. You know I am. Thank you for
don't
that.
Don't make this 2 hours. We don't got that kind of time. Like, try and be succinct with this thing. You know?
Okay. I will keep my gushing to a minimum.
We can do a Catwoman specific episode if you want, where you can just gush about all the different Catwoman that you love.
Oh, dude, now you said it on a recording, so now that's official,
by,
man.
By Catwoman, I mean all of them, not just that ridiculously stupid movie that you seem to enjoy.
Oh, of course, Patience Phillips Catwoman. Even though I do like that movie, that's far from my favorite Catwoman. She
like,
is
what we'll do to make it even. We'll go back and pick out some like Catwoman specific storylines.
Okay.
And include them in our discussion.
Okay.
Just so it's not all movie talk all the time.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That in mind.
Hey, well, please tell me, Adam, did you finally read the Batman Annual number 2?
I did. But let's save that for one of our comic reviews.
Fine, but can I just ask you, was that not one of the most beautiful, greatest comic books ever written?
It was phenomenal. It was great. And I'll basically, when we get off air, because I don't want to spoil it for future episodes of our listeners, I'll tell you exactly what I thought about it. But for now, go ahead. Tell us, Catwoman. Go ahead.
Okay.
Who's your pick?
This pick, even though I love another live-action Catwoman as well, this pick was not hard for me at all. Anne Hathaway is my favorite live-action Catwoman. Anne Hathaway's Catwoman is incredible. Anne Hathaway, honestly, I really do believe that she probably should have won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for The Dark Knight Rises, because her performance is out of this world. She, you get that introduction to her at the beginning of the film when she's in disguise as one of the servers at Wayne Manor, and she's has this facade, and she's like, you see, she is just a master at sort of, and I'm going to get into this a little bit further in a couple minutes, but she is just a master of sort of disguise in that movie, and she's playing it off like she's this innocent server who has no malintentions, and then she just drops it in an instant with that line, oops. By the way,
when she did it, I was aroused. When you did it, I was just turned off. Go ahead. Keep going.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, she just, her performance, and she does it again later in the movie when she tricks those guys, and it's just so brilliant because you see how smart Catwoman, she's always a step ahead of everybody. She tricks those guys with that she's dealing with the clean slate thing with, and she's like, and she starts, and then when she gets the cops to come, and then she's screaming as if she has nothing to do with everything, and she's just shrieking like she's experienced this whole traumatic thing, and as soon as they walk away, she completely composes herself. And just Anne Hathaway's performance there was brilliant. And one thing I love about this version of Catwoman, it's so comic accurate. They really portrayed her as this grounded cat burglar who is, she does the right thing even though she's on the wrong side of the law, and ultimately, like, she starts out the movie like she's doing things for herself, but then by the end of the movie, like, she ultimately does the right thing, and like, she's gonna take the bat pod and she's gonna leave the city, but then she winds up going and helping Bruce. And man, that line when she goes and saves Bruce, I just love it. And I shouldn't say that line, that scene really, where she goes and saves Bruce. And oh my goodness, the scene when she is with Batman. And she says, this line also makes me cry all the time. It, when she says, you've given the city everything. And he says, not everything, not yet.
So, and, you know, between the two of us and that, yeah, the whole crying thing with superhero movies.
Yes.
We're like really skinny versions of Kevin Smith.
Yes. Yeah. I
mean, if you combine us, we get close to Kevin Smith. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, so maybe. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, if we did like the whole super twins thing, we'd be Kevin Smith.
Yes. Yeah. You don't even want to know. You know, I'm gonna bring it up again just because we were just talking about it.
So if you ever visit me in Toronto and we go watch one of these superhero movies, these DC movies, we may be the only two morons crying in the theater. Right? Like, we just. We'd be swimming. We'd have to bring bathing suits. We'd be swimming.
At least the theater's dark.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to bring this up.
Empty buckets of popcorn would be filled with tears. But go on. Continue.
You don't want to know how many tissues I had to use reading that Batman Annual number 2.
Oh my goodness,
I was bawling by the end of that thing. But anyway, getting back to The Dark Knight Rises, though, and Anne Hathaway's Catwoman, the best scene of that movie, my favorite Batman scene and my favorite Catwoman scene as well ever committed to film, is the end scene where they kiss and then Batman gets into the bat to take away the bomb, because it's like she's seeing him sacrifice himself and make that sacrifice, and she's like, we could run away together basically, and obviously they eventually do, but man, that scene kills me. And I'll bring up one other scene. My favorite fight scene, my favorite Batman fight scene, and my favorite Catwoman fight scene ever is the Bat-Cat rooftop fight scene. It's the first time we see Batman fight with a partner in that movie, and it's with his true love, Catwoman, and they're fighting together, and you see Batman, he's perched up there. They don't care. And then they fight together, and then Catwoman's about to use a gun, and Batman kicks it out of her hand. No guns, no killing. And oh my goodness! And then they get into the bat, my mother told me not to get into cars with strange men. This isn't a car. And then oh my goodness, her performance in that movie is, like I said, she should have won an Oscar for that movie, because her performance, she captures both sides. Like, she captures the, you know, when she's playing other personas with Selena Kyle, when she's Okay, another scene. I'm just gonna. I'm sorry. I keep rambling, but the scene with the Batman versus Bane fight, and you see Catwoman does betray Batman, but you see how hurt she is because she. I mean, already from that point, I feel like she was. I mean, she understood Batman. And that's the thing that really I love about the relationship, how well they understand each other when so few others do, and the way she already cared for Batman at that moment. You see how devastating, like. Did betray Batman. You see how much it hurts her seeing Bane do this to him, and like that scene is great. This and then when Bruce comes back and she, oh my goodness, that scene with the apple when she take the apple from that kid and then she stops the bite of the apple. Anne Hathaway killed in The Dark Knight Rises, hands down, phenomenal Catwoman performance, the best bar none. Hands down, my friend.
Mike. All right, so there's there was his ode to Anne Hathaway, I agree with everything you're saying. I'm not going to argue with you on any point, but for me, and I'll admit it's largely nostalgia. I have to select Michelle Pfeiffer. Reason being is I loved how she went from meek and, you know, this meek and demure secretary to this feral. You know, this feral, like, villainous is the wrong word, but a, you know, this almost like feral creature, like, you know, performance when she became Catwoman. And there was that scene where, you know, the post transformation scene where I, like after the cats bring her back to life and she goes insane. It was just like such a range in performance and a different level from when she was this, you know, the meek secretary of Max Schreck. And there was, you know, such a sleek sexiness to her movements and her performance as Catwoman, you know, in costume. But also her interactions with Bruce Wayne, especially that party scene. You know, the masquerade ball that they were at.
Yeah.
When they discover that, like, each other's secret identity.
Yes.
And it's the whole regurgitation of the you know, they're saying the opposite line of dialogue. You know, a kiss can be a kiss on. Well, what? I just watched the movie the other day.
Kiss can be dead. Mistletoe can be deadly if you eat it. A kiss can be even deadlier if you mean it.
Yeah, right. So that whole exchange, and when she's like, first she's laughing hysterically, and then she's crying because, you know, she's emotional, and then she's like, "Do we have to fight now?" To me, that was so just. It was heartbreaking, and also the scene at the end when he's trying to convince her, he's like, not to kill Max Schreck. He's like, "You don't have to do this. You know, we can go home." And he's like, you know, we're the same. We're split down the middle. And she's like, I'd love to, you know, live the fairy tale with you, that, you know, in your castle and blah blah blah. The range of like meek to violent to sexy to heartbreaking. It's just it was all encompassing, and I just hook, line, and sinker. You know, from day one, in 92, I fell for it. And it stayed with me. Now, having said that, Anne Hathaway was great in her iteration, and it's her iteration is slightly more true to the books. But I can't not love Michelle Pfeiffer and what she did in that role. So for me, as much as I love Anne Hathaway, it's Michelle Pfeiffer.
And you know, Adam, I'm really not going to argue with you on this one, because, like I said, yes, for me, it's hands down Anne Hathaway, but Michelle Pfeiffer was phenomenal. I honestly think she should have won an Oscar for that role too. Like you said, her, the way she, just like Anne Hathaway did too, the way she could flip a switch from one, from like sort of one personality to the other. And like when she was, like you said, in the masquerade ball scene, when she starts laughing and then she starts, yeah, that she's phenomenal in that role. Michelle Pfeiffer is, She should have won an Oscar too, because she is that role was brilliantly acted by her, and her dynamic with Bruce, and that scene kills me at the end too with her, where Bruce is talking and he's like split right down the middle, and he's talking about how similar they are in so many ways, and like the way when she starts talking about them running away, and one thing that does give rise is one of the few things that gives rise is the edge for me here is that Bruce and Selena actually do run away together in Rises, whereas they don't get the happy ending in Returns, which is one thing that gives Rises the edge for me. Still, that part just I love. We've been so fortunate because, to me, we've really gotten three. And I forgot to mention, I said there's two Catwoman I love earlier, but really there's three that I truly, truly love. And that's Anne Hathaway, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Cameron Bigandova, because we've been so fortunate to get three phenomenal versions.
She's sort of a hybrid of Michelle Pfeiffer and Anne Hathaway.
She is. She is in many ways. Yeah. And because she is more comics accurate, I think, also than.
But she
than,
looks like a dead ringer for Michelle Pfeiffer.
Exactly. She the resemblance is uncanny. You remember that picture I sent you of the side by side or whatever?
I'm not gonna lie. I'm jealous of David Mazouz, Rakeev. To be his age and to work with both Natalie and what was her name, the one Silver St. Cloud.
Yeah, that's Natalie. Yeah, that's her.
Whatever her full name is, Natalie. Whatever.
Oh, Natalie Allen Lind. Yeah.
That's Natalie Allen Lind. To be able to be his age and work with Natalie Allen Lind and Cameron Bigandova, and to play essentially Batman. He's one lucky SOB.
Yes, he is. And I also want to point out, because I forgot to mention it with Anne Hathaway's Catwoman. Nolan did his sort of homage to the masquerade ball scene, and Anne Hathaway and Christian Bale, and their chemistry was phenomenal too. And the way they homaged that scene, and then that whole scene with "There's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne." Phenomenal. Yeah, phenomenal.
It was really good. And with that, I think now we have to get to wrapping this up, and to do that we have to pick last but most definitely not least Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Yes indeed.
Jordan, go ahead.
Wait, I think you're supposed to go first on this one, aren't you?
So I've agonized over this, ladies and gentlemen. This was by far the hardest choice I had to make. Oh man. This hurts. Having to do this hurts. Because there are three Batman and Bruce Wayne that I love. And to pick one over the other is difficult.
There's four, Adam, that you love, aren't there? And if you're going just Bruce Wayne. Because I don't want you to forget somebody.
Who am I forgetting?
It's overlooked. And that's David Mazouz.
Yeah, no. Okay, four. Because I really like what he's doing. But he was not my final choice. For Bruce Wayne, I have to go Christian Bale. Because we got more time of him in the dual identity. Where he's Batman. He's basically Batman. He's the Bruce that he is with Alfred, which is like an overgrown version of the 9-year-old child. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way he opens up to Alfred, I view him as that's the grown version of that child. And then there's the aloof billionaire, persona. And, the scenes where, he buys the hotel and he goes swimming in the fountain, right, with the two girls, or when he buys the restaurant just to be able to put the chairs together. Or the scene at the party in Batman Begins when he kicks everybody out. Like, that was the first time where the billionaire playboy facade became a real thing, for like became the quote-unquote facade aspect of it, right? And with him as Alfred, you see how open and honest and frail and tortured the character is. So Bale's performance was top-notch. Like I said, I was tempted to give it to Affleck, but unfortunately, we haven't seen enough of Affleck, given the fact that he was in two team-up movies, and so I couldn't give it to Affleck. With Batman, oh, but you see how tough this is. It's very tough for me, folks. I'm not pausing because I have amnesia or anything like that. It's legitimately difficult. Crap, Christ Almighty! This is terrible. I'm gonna go with. Okay, I have to again. It's close, but I'll give it to Bale again, and mainly because I thought he really managed to sell me on that. Like that, it wasn't just Bruce Wayne in a suit, in a costume. It was a different personality. It was a feral creature of the night kind of personality. And look, I think the voice got overly ridiculous by the time Rises hit. Like it was almost a parody of itself. But the voice change he did in Batman Begins was pitch perfect. I thought the fighting in Batman Begins was the best of the Dark Knight trilogy for me. Overall, in terms of the whole movie, and I know most of that was down to the stunt double, but for those reasons, I have to go with Bale. And honestly, if I'm going to reveal who my runner up was, my close runner up was, all of you are thinking, well, it's Affleck. My second runner up is Michael Keaton. And literally, I just finalized that decision tonight. That's how close it was. I've been agonizing over this for a week. And so there's my choices.
A hero can be anyone, even a man doing something as simple and reassuring as putting a coat around a young boy's shoulder to let him know that the world hadn't ended.
Couldn't you have just subbed the YouTube clip of that in?
I could have, but it wouldn't have been as much fun.
It would have been a lot more pleasurable for a listener. Go ahead. So I guess your choice for you're telling us your choice for Batman
and Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
Hands down, Christian Bale. This guy is my Batman. He's my Batman. I was 7 years old when Batman Begins came out. I was 14 years old when The Dark Knight Rises came out. This was the Batman pretty much of my time, basically. This was the Batman that, I've said it before, The Batman was really the series that made me a diehard Batman fan, but that premiered in 2004. Batman Begins came out the following year in 2005 and just continued that and just accentuated that. And this is my favorite version. And this extends past just Bale, but it extends to the whole trilogy and that. Nolan Batman, basically, is my favorite version of Batman in any medium, and Bale's Batman specifically, and his Bruce Wayne is my favorite Batman and Bruce Wayne, and it's because Bale captured all aspects of the character for me. He captured Batman, and I loved his voice, by the way. I loved him in all three movies, as Batman, his Batman voice, and I loved his Bruce Wayne because you got to see the Playboy persona. You got to see who he really was when he was around people and when he was around Selina and when he was around Alfred. You got to see all sides of the character that he played, and just his journey over those films. Like, you got so, at least I did, so emotionally invested in Bruce Wayne. Just all his ups and downs with those movies, and it's just, my goodness, phenomenal job. And I've got to say, that final scene, the Hero Anyone scene, it's my favorite Batman scene in ever in live action, because it just... That scene is so... It's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful cap on that trilogy of, you get the flashback to literally the night when Bruce became Batman, which was, I mean, in some ways, was the night his parents were murdered. And it's like, you get to see him make the, I mean, ultimately he did survive, but you get to see him sort of, is him make the ultimate sacrifice to save his city. And it's like, the fact that Bale's Batman got a happy ending with Selina makes me so happy. I've said it before, Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle are my two favorite fictional characters ever. And to see them in a happy ending, nothing could possibly be happier. So I just love the way this Batman went out. I think it was just, that trilogy is flawless in my eyes. Like, there is the things I would change about that trilogy are so minuscule that I shouldn't even bring them up, because they're so minuscule. That trilogy from top to bottom, and yes, I am talking about the whole trilogy, but Bale's performance is what really makes that trilogy work, because it is, unlike previous Batman movies, where the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy focused so much on the villains. Yes, the Dark Knight trilogy focused so much on the villains. Frankly, for the most part, it had better villains than the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy. However, that trilogy was about Bruce Wayne. It was about Batman. It wasn't about the villains. It was about this guy's journey as a hero. And it did it so beautifully, and Bale was phenomenal. There you go.
Couldn't have said it any better myself.
You said it quite well when you talked about him, too. So
that's true. But that wraps up our Ultimate Batman fan cast. Let us know what you thought. Who your choices are below in the comments, and it'll be interesting to compare and see where everybody else lies on that. But we had fun doing these. It was, some of them were a tough call, especially between the Batman and the Superman one. These are they're not easy to make these calls, but we did them, and I'm pretty happy with my list. I think Jordan obviously is happy with his list. We hope you enjoyed these episodes. We'll do more for other characters. But until next episode, have a great week and enjoy the weekend. So long, everybody. And
social media plugs, Adam. Oh,
all right, yeah. there it is. After a string of success, I botched it.
We got to ask for iTunes reviews. We got to shout out the Batman Podcast Network.
All right, lots of things to do. Hold on a second. I think I'm keeping busy. I got swept up in the emotion of Jordan's speech there.
well, thanks, Adam.
no, I'm just covering my ass that I forgot. Okay, so if you want to find me on social media, it's at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. Jordan, where can they find you on the social media platforms?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV.
You'll be hearing from Christian Bale's attorneys. as Jordan alluded to, we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, which was created and hosted by Batman on Film. We're proud to be a part of that. And if you want to check out other Batman-centric podcasts, go to the website and they will run them all down for you.
BatmanPodcastNetwork.com.
Right. You're going to have to get over that real quick. But as I was saying before, Jordan reminded me that I was missing 2/3 of our ending. We hope you have a fantastic week. We have a great weekend. So long, everybody.